The University of Wisconsin-Madison will close its Division of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's moving most employees to other departments. It's Friday, July 11th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, we'll hear from our politics team on a big state Supreme Court decision that came down this week. And the latest story in our Wisconsin road trip series brings us to Kenosha, where a 75-year-old baton twirler is a crowd favorite at Kenosha Kingfish Games. Stay with us.
You know you can count on WPR for news that's important, music that makes your day better, and conversations that make you think. We hope you'll make a financial contribution to support the radio service you rely on, and in fact, we count on it. The single largest portion of our budget comes from listener support. If you're not a member yet, make a gift of any amount today at WPR.org. Thank you.
The Division of Diversity, Equity, and Education Achievement at the University of Wisconsin-Madison is closing. Corrine Hess reports Chancellor Jennifer Mnookin made the announcement this week.
A majority of the programs and staff members in the DEI division will be moved to other departments at the university. About 100 employees worked in the office. A university spokesperson said fewer than 10 of those employees received layoff notices this week. UW-Madison is not eliminating any scholarships or support programs that were handled by the office. The university's DEI department has been under fire for months from Republican leaders in the state legislature and the Trump administration. In April, a Republican-ordered audit estimated the UW system spent about $40 million on offices with duties connected to DEI. Republican leaders applauded Mnookin's announcement. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Officials in Milwaukee are looking to crack down on illegal dumping in the city. Evan Casey has the details.
Milwaukee Alder Charlene Moore says illegal dumping is a citywide issue. She says her constituents are tired of things like tires, construction debris, and couches being tossed out on their streets.
At the end of the day, residents they're fed up.
The Common Council recently raised the fine for illegal dumping to a flat fee of $5,000. One person recently racked up a $15,000 fine for dumping trash three times in one location. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson said he hopes that sends a message.
Now, these citation amounts are nothing compared to the actual costs caused by the crime.
A city department also recently placed 20 hidden cameras at common illegal dumping sites, and they're offering a $1,000 reward to people who identify suspects. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A new lawsuit has been filed in Dane County Circuit Court looking to redraw Wisconsin's congressional districts ahead of the 2026 midterm elections. This comes just weeks after the Wisconsin Supreme Court declined to hear two different challenges to current U.S. House districts. The latest case was filed in a lower court and is built on slightly different arguments. It says Wisconsin's eight congressional districts have been drawn in a, quote, anti-competitive gerrymander. Democrats argue that purple Wisconsin should have roughly equal congressional representation, but right now it's divided 6-2 in favor of Republicans. Democrats nationwide have had their eyes on two Republican-held congressional districts in Wisconsin as they look to take back the U.S. House next year. Well, speaking of the state Supreme Court, it's issued some big rulings in recent weeks on everything from abortion to those congressional maps. But a decision this week on administrative rules might be one of the biggest of this term. WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk covered the ruling and joined Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson to unpack what it means.
So, Anya, the court has been very busy lately. It issued decisions recently on abortion, PFAS regulation, congressional redistricting, you name it. So, tell me, how can this ruling on administrative rules still be considered one of the big ones this term?
It matters because it really gets at the heart of how separation of powers works in Wisconsin, and more specifically, power disputes between a Democratic governor, Tony Evers, and the Republican-held legislature. So the broadest way to describe what happened here is the legislature used to have a lot of power to shape or block administrative rules, and now, as of Tuesday, they don't. That power now shifts over to state agencies under the control of the governor, of Tony Evers, and gives them much more leeway to write these rules.
And before we get into the details of why, there might be someone out there asking, what is an administrative rule? And I think we should answer that. Broadly speaking, what do administrative rules do?
Right. So there are laws and then there are rules, which are basically the details of the law. The idea is you have subject level experts in state agencies who determine how the laws passed by the legislature can actually be implemented or administered. State agencies are under a governor's control. And so oftentimes these rules do reflect a governor's value system or policy priorities. And then here in Wisconsin, there's actually one extra step, which is that after those rules would come down, they'd go to one legislative committee for final review.
And at issue in this case was just how much power lawmakers have to review those rules and block them. Let's talk about one of the examples that was before the court. It was a rule advanced by Evers' administration banning conversion therapy. What happened?
Yeah, that's a really high-profile example of a rule. So the law in Wisconsin says mental health professionals have to follow an ethics code to be licensed in Wisconsin, and Evers gets into power and proposes one rule for that ethics code that therapists can't attempt to convert a person to one sexuality or gender identity. That's conversion therapy. Then that rule went before this powerful legislative committee, which suspended it. But then we get into procedural gymnastics because eventually the committee does have to introduce a bill regarding a rule. But under the way that it's kind of always operated, it doesn't actually have to pass that bill. It can just introduce it and then refer it to committee and let it languish indefinitely.
So they would introduce a bill with no intention of passing it. And that way, the legislature avoided a governor's veto. Most lawmakers don't even have to vote on it. And the rule remains blocked.
Exactly. So Evers sued over that exact process. He said that amounts to a legislative veto and allows lawmakers to bypass certain fundamental principles of lawmaking. And the court said, literally, we agree with the governor. They said this practice empowers just a small handful of legislators to have statewide influence over policy in a way that was preventing state agencies from doing their mandated jobs. And so that's in violation of the state constitution.
So what was the reaction to this?
So conservative justices in their dissent and Republican lawmakers afterwards said this is like a king-making move for Evers. They say it's political and giving too much power to one branch at the expense of the duly elected representative legislature. Evers and his supporters said it was the legislature that had too much power and they were using that to stymie the work of government.
And what might the long-term effects of this ruling be?
Well, according to Justice Brian Hagedorn, the effect is a constitutional revolution that we don't actually know the full details of. So what we do know is that these questions will pop back up anytime the next time some controversial issue like conversion therapy pops up. It could be about building codes or shoreline regulation or PFAS cleanup or vaccine approval. So we know that when those disputes come up, as of Tuesday, that authority is more in the governor's corner than it was before. And we also know that we can expect a lot more lawsuits to resolve those questions.
That was WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk speaking with WPR political editor Sean Johnson. Coming up, we'll hear about a dedicated baseball fan, performer, and host mom in the Northwoods League. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Bridget Bowden with a story about a performer who's become a fixture at some Wisconsin baseball games. It's part of WPR's Wisconsin Road Trip series, which features pit stops across the state to explore some of the people, places, and things that make Wisconsin summers special.
For some people in Wisconsin, baseball is a summer staple. And for Kenosha Kingfish fans, there's a baton-twirling usher who is an icon at the team's Northwoods League games. WPR's Evan Casey has more from the ballpark.
For the land of the free and the home of the brave.
A day at the ballpark is one of the best parts of summer. It's Father's Day at historic Simmons Field, the home of the Kenosha Kingfish. The team is part of the Northwoods League, and their games have something for everyone.
And I want you to buy him a Philly cheesesteak for Father's Day. No more ties, no more mugs. Philly cheesesteaks.
Another fixture at Kingfish games is Jane Snedeker. Before the game, she's handing out special wristbands to fans.
So this is your wristband. It's
okay.
The 75-year-old retired school teacher is a Jane of all trades. She's a host mom, an usher, and has even donned the team's King Elvis mascot suit. But to most fans, she's known as Twirling Jane.
I started twirling when I was in sixth grade on Long Island.
Over 60 years and a move to the Midwest later, Snedeker still hasn't put her batons down. She used to perform a quick twirling routine during long pitching changes and delays. Now, it's a nightly ritual at every home game. Snedeker parades around behind home plate to the tune of YMCA, and she invites anyone and everyone to join in on the fun.
It's a little awkward to go up to people that you don't know and ask them to join, but sometimes some of the kids are coming up to me. I usually keep a baton in my car at all times. You never know when you have to have a parade or something.
Snedeker is also a host mom. Around 80 college players from across the nation will cleat up for the Kingfish this summer, and many of them need a place to stay.
I learned that some of the players needed housing, and I live a mile away. My husband had died, and I had two sons, and I thought, well, maybe that would be good for the kids, and I can help out the team.
It's hard to estimate just how many people have stayed with her. Most summers, one or two players take up her guest rooms. But during the 1995 season, she had six players in her home. Some slept in the basement, while others took over the family room.
It was fun, because if I would look on the field, sometimes my house was all in the field. You know, I might have, you know, I had an outfielder, I had a first baseman or something like that.
Most of the players are college students, which means they cannot get paid to play for the Kingfish. But they can accept donations of room and board. In the meals, Snedeker regularly cooks for them. Pennsylvania native Robbie Porco stayed with her last summer. He says she cooked breakfast for him every morning and even had warm cookies waiting at home if the team won.
I mean, she was everything I could have asked for as like a host mom for the summer. Like, super accommodating. It was like her house was my house, that kind of thing.
In all, there are around 20 host families for the team. Eva Hoy is another one of them. Back at the ballpark, she says she's known Jane for several years.
And when you stop her, she'll say, what do you have now? You know who I have? You know how many I have in the back? So it's her energy level. It's she's always got new ideas, and she'll say, here, hold these pom-poms. I have to do this.
Snedeker means so much to baseball in Kenosha that the team had a bobblehead night in her honor. Several teachers she knows in Kenosha came to the game, and her sons came back into town from California.
It was a lot of fun. I was glad it didn't rain. The Kingfish won, and there was a lot of fun going on here.
When it comes to baton twirling at games, Snedeker says she doesn't plan on stopping anytime soon.
WPR's Evan Casey brought us that story on Twirling Jane of the Kenosha Kingfish. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Bridget Bowden.
You can join us every Friday this summer for more Wisconsin road trips and to see all the stops and plan your own road trip. You can find the series page at wpr.org/roadtrip. And of course, a quick check of your weekend forecast before letting you go. Mostly cloudy and humid today, highs in the 70s and 80s. Some rain in southeastern Wisconsin really early on this morning, and then some rain in western Wisconsin a little bit later on. That'll be in the south as well. Still cloudy overnight with a chance for spotty showers and storms across the state, lows down into the 60s. cloudy tomorrow with a chance for rain to start the day, but things will start clearing up from west to east during the daytime with highs in the 70s and 80s. Plenty of sunshine expected with highs in the 80s across the state by Sunday. And that'll do it for this Friday. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producers today were Bridget Bowden, John Davis, and Courtney Everett. Have a great rest of your day and a fantastic weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.